Making After School Cool.
Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those who are interested in the activities youth are involved in during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Mike Wilson. At a time when the major colleges in the state of Texas did not allow African-American athletes to receive football scholarships, Mr. Jerry Levias became a civil rights pioneer. He was the first black scholarship athlete to play football for Southern Methodist University. The year was 1965, the same year Bloody Sunday, when John Lewis and others were beaten for trying to cross the Pettus Bridge on their march to Selma. It was the same year Malcolm X was assassinated, the year of the Watts riots, and it was the same year President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act, which prohibited racial discrimination in voting. Add to the fact the growing concerns of the Vietnam War, 1965 was a year of national civic unrest. In this climate, Jerry Levias ran into the football field. He faced not only hatred from his own opponents, but some of his teammates as well. Yet he still succeeded. It is my honor to have as my guest today, Mr. Jerry Levias, retired professional football player, civil rights pioneer, and a youth advocate, and is a living hero among us. Mr. Levias, welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic, and I appreciate the great introduction that will let people understand that what I've been through in those years and all the things that was happening.
Well, for my first question, do you think you were prepared for what you would be facing when you enrolled into SMU?
No, I wasn't. And that's the question that I have always asked myself. Why did I go to SMU? And the only thing that I can basically say is because, you know, God had a plan. I'm from a very religious family. And it was another reason is that my grandmother really liked Coach Fry. My grandmother was the head of our family, religious leader and everything else. And she liked Coach Fry. But the things that Coach Fry explained to me, we never did talk about being the first or breaking barriers or stuff like that. But he started off talking about my education. You know, he said if I was lucky enough to make his football team and, you know, play for him and then come out of college, I'd be 22, 23 years old. What was I going to do for the rest of my life? And that was the thing that was the decision maker for me, because someone that cared about me enough to talk about education. All the other recruiters were talking about football and other things.
Road and after school programs have to face negative situations at home, possibly socially, economically, and emotionally. Can you share with them how you, during your days at SMU, who had to face overt racism on a continuous basis, how were you able to succeed both academically and athletically in such a negative environment?
And, you know, growing up in those times, and, you know, parents and fathers on their sons would say, grown men don't cry. So, you know, the things like that I had, and my father was one that says that, he said, you make your bed, you sleep in it, which meant that if you gave that man your word, that you would go to that school. So, and I want you to be a man of your word. And that's one of the reasons I didn't quit. But then Coach Fry was a great coach. And, you know, from one of the things about the education, I learned to speak West Texan. Because he's from West Texas, and, you know, he would always say to me, he called me Levi when he loved me, he called me Jerry when I was in trouble. And he would say, if you don't want them to get your goat, don't let them know where it's hid. So, and that was another, he was a great philosopher in a way. It's like Achilles. He was a strong man, but he had one weakness, and it was well hidden from him. Right. So that was what he was trying to tell me. And the other thing is, he was always, you got to dance with what brung you, which means stay with God, stay in your religion, you know, keep your faith. But to be able to handle that situation, I wasn't prepared for it, because, of course, we lived in a segregated society, more so in those days, went to segregated schools. But then going to a school like SMU, great education, I was, guess, like lost feeling, but I knew that I was as smart as anyone, and I knew my athletic abilities was as good as anyone.
And you actually graduated in, what, three and a half years?
3.5 years, yeah.
That's a great accomplishment even today to play sports as well as balance your studies.
As a former college and professional athlete, what are your thoughts regarding today's athletes speaking out on social inequalities?
Well, you know, it's nothing for me. It's nothing new. For a lot of people, it is something different, because people do not realize about Thomas Smith and John Carlos and Muhammad Ali, basically doing the things. And I'm glad to see a lot of athletes are standing out for equality, because, as you know, the majority of sports are, you know, at least 70 some odd percent of athletes are black. And then the things that are happening in the community, I'm proud that they know something more than sports. They care about people and things that are happening in the community.
Unlike your youth, when there were so many things going on regarding civil rights, today many young kids are witnessing protesting for the first time. Do you think parents, educators, and especially after-school program staff need training on how to discuss unbiasedly these types of issues with their kids?
Yes, I do. I think that the with things that are going on right now, and especially the young kids, impressionable young kids, or even some of the older ones, that the teachers should be basically have some seminars as adults and have a open discussion. Because there are some things that, you know, I would say whites, Hispanics, blacks, they do not want to ask. You know, it's just like the idea when you see a young kid say, let me feel your hair, you know,
right. It's
different. And try to explain to them that some kind of way that we're all the children of God, and, you know, there's differences. We don't all think alike, and that's why we try to get you an education to think in the right way. And I think that's what some of the teachers and parents need to discuss with their young kids, even before they get into the school environment, and especially before they become 10 or 11 years old, and because right now they see everything on television and everything else, so it makes their job a little bit harder and a little bit more important. I think they should, because it's, you know, getting out in the world and not being prepared. And I think teachers, parents should discuss those things with young people so they will be prepared and know how to think for themselves and know how to handle certain situations. And to learn that we are not that much different. We are basically all alike. You know, God gave us the life. And we don't let life live us. We have to live life. And that's what parents and teachers should be concentrating on more, and telling these things are going to happen in life, and to let the young kids know we're all alike.
I know you personally had the opportunity of meeting Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What was it like to have a sit-down conversation with a historical figure?
I can't call him a mentor, but I guess he was a word from God. And he told me that always keep my emotions in control. And you know, that's the thing about, you know, people get on your nerves or say things or do things to you. And that was like Coach Rice told me, if you don't want them to get your goat, don't let them know where it's hid.
Right.
So that is a place, you know, you have to stay composed in different situations and not get carried away.
I know a lot of youth organizations are trying to do more and more in regards to teaching their staff as well as people who are enrolled in their programs about history of racism, discrimination, social injustice. In fact,
the YMCA is doing a 21-day challenge, which introduces adults and kids alike to issues addressing social injustice. Beyond just having students read books on dealing with social inequalities, what other types of activities can after-school programs involve students with to learn about these issues?
I think, you know, sometimes I don't know how the district or the school would do it, but there should be after-school programs to discuss such issues and differences and with people and discuss problems with people. So right now I'm involved in trying to get more minorities involved in psychiatry because a lot of these kids have problems and they need to talk about it. They need someone to discuss it with them. And I think that also goes for the adults. When a lot of people say that, I'm not racist, but really? In some things that you really are, and you really don't know it.
Right.
Yeah, so I think they should have projects with these young kids dealing with people from all over the world, even not just here in America, you know, talk about things of people over in China, Australia, up in Paris, you know, things like that. But, and the other thing is that it's just to teach them that we're not that much different, but we're so much alike.
Right.
And, you know, because, you know, there's going to be some kind of understanding, misunderstanding with kids, because now, you know, they're watching television, they're watching movies, and I would wish these rappers would stop using the N-word on a lot of these songs.
Right.
One of the things that's holding us back in the fact, you know, because it's, you know, you just have to discuss those things because their minds are ready to be developed.
Mm-hmm.
Developing them in the right way. And one of the greatest things that if you want to play games, you know, playing chess, because chess kind of to me is a game of life, you know, to teach them about, you know, offense, defense, or things that you have to do and have discussions. And you know, there's things that, you know, I get the parents' permission to discuss. I don't think some parents want their kids to discuss racism.
Mr. Levias, I have to say I'm extremely blessed to have both of my parents still alive and doing extremely well. My dad is 81 and my mom is 80, and they're both in pretty good health. And during this time of so much social unrest, my teenage daughters actually have a resource that they can go and talk to who actually lived through similar times during the civil rights struggle. I know you had to deal with some extreme hardships and a lot of hatred thrown at you. How did you have the strength to forgive those who were being so mean to you?
Well, because the thing about hate, and I had the experience, I would say one time in my entire life, of really, really knowing what hate. You know, you can dislike, but then hate is something that really eats you up. It doesn't do that much to the other person, but what it does to you is so important. And that's the thing that you have to work on. And because, you know, and that's the other things that, you know, sportsmanship, you know, they call it sportsmanship, but you know, it should be life-ship.
Right.
You know, sportsmanship is something, but you know, it teaches you a lot of, you know, about honesty, integrity, and how to play fair and things like that, you know. And it's all education because that's what life is. You know, you don't, like I said before, you know, you don't, life doesn't live you. You live life. You have to make the decisions. And that's what we have to let these young people understand. And I understood that at an early age with my father. Because my father would not let me accept being a second-class citizen. And the only thing that was going to make a difference with me is that education. Education fill in a lot of gaps, because then it teaches you how to think and to appreciate other people and other things.
Now, I know you're an advocate for youth causes by your work with such organizations as Boys and Girls Harbor, Child Protective Services, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So what motivates you to be involved with these youth agencies?
Well, I guess because I had a lot of questions that I couldn't answer. Why I was chosen out of all the athletes that grew up, you know, they were larger, faster athletes. And why did Coach Fry choose me? And God, and I believe in God, he must have had a purpose. And so that purpose was for me to pass things on to other young people when they were in a development stage of their lives. So you mentioned, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and you mentioned Boys and Girls Harbor and working for Harris County Protective Services. And that's where we need help. And those are the things where the young people are developed, or some of those people who have not had the necessary guidance that we have of having a mother or a father to be able to explain things to them.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, yeah, the things that I would like to say is that we are God's children, and people have to understand that. That, you know, if God just basically wanted us to be, he could have made us all alike. But I think that what he did, I compare life and what God did is like a vegetable soup. And if you mix it up right and you treat it all right and you do everything right, you come out with something good, something tasty. And if we just love each other as human beings and as God's children, you know, I think everything would be okay.
Mr. Levias, thank you so much for taking your time to share your words of wisdom and being our guest for this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast. For our listeners, as always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast, where our guest was Jerry Levias, sharing his living history. Please join us on future podcasts as we continue to explore issues that are relevant to the out-of-school time field.